It's time for the Hockey Writers Grindline, a weekly show covering everything Detroit Red Wings. Brought to you by our own iconic top line of Wings writers. Sit back and enjoy the grind.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another Ryan Line here at the Hockey Writers. I'm your host, Matthew Zator, joined in by my defense partner, as always, Devin Little. Devin, how's it going on another week into the offseason for the Red Wings?
Yeah, always good to be here with you, Matt. Always happy to do another show. I say let's not waste another minute. Let's dive into it.
Let's go. I mean, the draft's coming. Like I say, it's getting closer by the week. As we keep talking here, our draft targets show is coming up soon too. So stay tuned for that. And so the off season is in full swing. So we'll be keeping talking about all this stuff. And thankfully, Red Wings have a GM. So shout out Toronto losing their GM today as we record. But that's not what we'll be talking about. So our one good, one bad. Let's get our show rolling with that. Devin, a good and a bad from the past week.
Yeah, you kind of teed me off there, set me up. I'm going to knock it down. My bad, I'm going to go non-Red Wings because there's not really a whole lot of Red Wings stuff going on in the first place, is the Toronto Maple Leafs firing Kyle Dubas. I don't think Dubas is the problem there. I think that when he does resurface with another team, that team is going to be very thankful that Toronto let him go. Like we were saying before we started recording, I don't know who Toronto is going to hire that is an upgrade over Dubas. At best, I think it's a lateral move. So interesting times in Toronto. And I'll give two goods. One is that there is chaos in Toronto and everybody who's not a Toronto fan loves it. Good to see some turmoil going on in Toronto. They broke the curse and now there's still, mayhem going on. So good stuff. And then the other good, I actually am going to say Jonathan Bergeron and Lucas Raymond skating on a line with Leo Carlson at the Worlds. Obviously, fat chance the Red Wings are going to draft Leo Carlson, but it's fun to fantasize, especially with those two on his wings, right? Yeah. And for the record, I have been impressed, especially with Raymond at the Worlds. He's wearing an A for Team Sweden. He looks like one of their best players, and that's exactly what you want to see out of a young player that the Red Wings are trying to build around.
Yeah, that is a good. I mean, like I say Leo Carlson is probably a real big pipe dream at this point, unless Yzerman does something crazy and moves up to that point. Because Carlson looking could be second overall. I mean, who knows? I mean, Anaheim may choose to go that route, and Fantilli drops to three, and not out of the realm of possibility. So that'll be an interesting to see what happens at the top of the draft after Bedard, because it's looking a bit more less light, not as certain as it was, I'd say, even a few weeks ago. So Carlson's kind of putting his name on the map here. So I'll go and I'll just match that bad. I think that's the biggest one right now, is that the Maple Leafs, after Dubas saying that he's not going to go anywhere. If it's not Toronto, it's not going to be somewhere else. I don't know if that's changed now that it's kind of doesn't have a job right now. And that whole press conference is a little bit cringy to watch. Shanahan's
for sure
comments and stuff. So didn't look very good, especially after saying that he wanted to, keep Dubas, and now he doesn't. So I mean, it's an interesting dynamic. But so that's a bad. Good. I'll go non-Red Wings on this one too. Is the long overtimes? I love
that. Yes.
Everyone's kind of like, oh, we gotta change it. Gotta make something different. I don't know. I think it's fun. The more longs. I wanted to go to five. I mean, it was 12 seconds away from going five. Fifth overtime. And I just remember whenever watching, and I'm sure Red Wings fans have memories of long overtimes as well. I love watching them. So, I mean, that's a good in my book. I mean, anytime. I mean, they don't happen as often as usually seems to go one overtime and it's done. Two maybe sometimes. But when it goes to that four, you're like, it's fun to watch because it's a rare thing to happen. So
for sure,
that's a good. All right. Well, let's get into some Red Wings talk now. And you know, we'll keep it on the vein of the playoffs because it's happening right now. We got the four finalists, the Carolina Hurricanes, Florida Panthers, Vegas Golden Knights, and the Dallas Stars. So whenever we look at these guys, and every team does this, every non-playoff team looks at these finalists and then the Stanley Cup winner and looks, why did they get here? You know, there's reasons for their success. So Devin, let's ask this question. What can the Red Wings learn from these conference finalists, how they got here? You know, their style of play, can they adapt anything to kind of make them successful for the playoffs? So what do you think?
I think there's a number of lessons and things that you can learn from this year's finalists. And I'll try to keep it relatively quick, but I'm going to kind of highlight one from each team here. I'll start with the Carolina Hurricanes. This is a team that has a lottery pick on their roster in Andrei Svechnikov. He's not playing. He's hurt. And so with that being said, I think that Carolina is probably the best example of a team that isn't built through the lottery and yet is, you know, a legitimate cup contender at this point, right? So I think that, you know, especially for a team like the Red Wings, we've talked about this a couple times now, no lottery luck. How are you going to build a contender without winning the lottery? Yes, the Hurricanes did get the second pick to pick Andrei Svechnikov, but they haven't needed him to this point in the playoffs. If they had him, who, you know, they'd be even more dangerous, right? But the point is that, you know, they got Sebastian Aho. They've got Jacob Slavin and the others. They also play a style under Rod Brind'Amour that fits their team and they execute it to perfection. And I think that's a key thing for maybe Derek Vallone to adapt. It's, you know, make sure your team buys into what you're selling and really plays your brand of hockey. Florida Panthers, they have a couple of lottery picks on their team. They have Aaron Ekblad, they have Alexander Barkov. So you can't do the lottery thing with them. But the point I'm going to say with them, or the takeaway you can have from them, is the Matthew Tkachuk trade. They won the President's Trophy last year. Everybody kind of figured that they were, you know, a favorite to win the cup last year, lost in the second round. So what do they do in the offseason? They make a big swing. They trade Jonathan Huberdeau, Mackenzie Weegar, and others to acquire Matthew Tkachuk. And at the time, you know, everybody had a different take on that trade. And here we are today, and it sure looks like they won that deal, you know, handedly. So I think there's something to be said for, you know, making a really bold move to push your team forward and add something that your team was missing. I think Matthew Tkachuk's probably my favorite for the Conn Smythe Trophy right now, at least, especially after his game winner, right? Vegas Golden Knights, they're kind of an exception to like all of this because they're still an expansion team, right? And they built most of their core through the expansion draft and then free agency and whatnot. But I can even make the same point about making a big swing with them. They went out and got Jack Eichel last year. They fell short of the playoffs, but you could tell even when he did play that Eichel was kind of a missing piece for them that they finally get secured. And now they have him for a full season. Here they are in the conference finals, and he's playing a big role for them as their top center. So another team that you can say, you know, once you've got most of your team, go out and make the big swing, go add that missing piece. And then last but not least, the Dallas Stars. The thing I'm going to say with them is how one draft can completely change the complexion of your franchise. For the Stars, it's the 2017 draft. They got Miro Heiskanen at third overall. Later on in the first round, they got Jake Oettinger. And then in the second round, they got Jason Robertson. If they made no other picks in that draft is already a slam dunk, like gold star, you know, you win. Good job. You won the 2017 draft. Point there is that drafting is hard, right? We know this. It's really easy to draft in hindsight. In the moment, you just got to kind of hope for the best. What the Stars did in 2017 is like the absolute best case scenario. But if you get that best case scenario, you've set your team up for success for the long run. You know, a lot is made of the Stars veteran guys. You got Jamie Benn, you got Joe Pavelski, you've got Tyler Seguin that are all in their 30s. But the Stars are going to be a team to watch for, you know, years to come because of Robertson, because of Oettinger, because of Heiskanen, because of Wyatt Johnston, because of Stankoven, right? All the guys they have coming. So drafting is key, even when you've already got a cup core. And if you get, you know, one really, really knock it out of the park draft, you can be set up for years to come.
That's a big that's a huge point. I mean, the thing is, like you mentioned, there's a lot of these teams were, I mean, built through the draft. There you've highlighted quite a few of each of them that, you know, a lot of their key players were drafted. And with the Carolina Hurricanes, you know, some measure of luck. I mean, Sebastian Aho was ridiculous where he was picked. I mean, yeah, he should have been in the first round. We did a redraft on Prospect Corner not that long ago of that draft. And Aho was, I believe he was second overall or third overall or something like that. We put him as.
And talk about getting lottery players without a lottery pick, right?
Right. Yeah. And the thing is what he's done, you know, he's definitely in that top tier of that draft now, looking back. And where they got him was just insane. So, I mean, you add him, you've got, yeah, Svechnikov's, yeah, lottery pick, but Slavin's another, like, he wasn't drafted very high. And yes, he's not a flashy defenseman, but if you don't have him, you know, the Hurricanes aren't where they are. He's probably, I'd say, the best two-way defenseman in the NHL. You know, one of those guys that, you know, just do their job. They're out there. They just do their job. So
if the Norris Trophy was awarded based solely on like defense, I think Slavin would be a finalist every year.
Yeah. I mean, that's an understatement. I think he's, you know, he's the same thing as like Chris Tanev. I mean, in his heyday with the Canucks, I mean, he would never win a Norris, but one of the more key defensemen on the team for a number of years. So, and even with the Calgary Flames, he's been really good. So it's, these four teams are all built differently. They all play similar. I mean, they all play different styles, but I'd say the Hurricanes and the Panthers, they've mentioned this on broadcast, they play a similar style. They both aren't puck possession. They kind of go in on the forecheck and try to just get the puck back, which I'm not a fan of that hockey, but I mean, if it works, I guess it's good. And the Panthers beat one of the best offensive teams in the league in the Maple Leafs and the Boston Bruins with that style. So it'll be interesting to see how many teams kind of, it depends on who wins the cup, I guess, but of how they kind of change who they are. And that's what seems to happen every year. Every team kind of tries to emulate the Stanley Cup winners. And there's certain teams you don't want to win the cup because you don't want to see that hockey more often. But we'll see. We'll see. And then just a quick thing on the Dallas Stars. I think that's another team that's you take by building from the draft. And like you said, that 2017 draft was just insane for them. And I'm not sure where Rupe Hintz was drafted, what year. But he's another one that, mm-hmm. that they got. I don't think he was a high draft pick either. So mm-hmm. yeah, you got to hit on those, on obviously the top guys, but those mid-level, lower-end picks also have to hit as well. And the Red Wings have a few of those guys that could potentially be that. And they also got the high-end picks. So they could be these teams in the future because they've got a lot of those pieces. And we'll just have to see how that kind of plays out in the next few years, right? So, but it's fun to kind of speculate because they do have a lot of them. And it's fun to see that these teams that are in the conference finals are that type of team. So have some optimism for the Red Wings in the future. Cause I think, you know, they could definitely be there. Not that long from now. All right. Well, let's get to our first off the rush and I'll give props to Don for giving us a bunch of questions here to look at. And the second one won't be yours, Don, so sorry about that. But this is the first one, and you also have one in our comment corner as well. So, Devin, this is the question. Let's see which one I'll pick here. So, this is on a trade that could potentially happen, and there's two guys. So, he's saying instead of paying high for Alex DeBrincat from the Ottawa Senators, what do you think about paying lower for Lafreniere from the New York Rangers? Do you think he could be a target for the Red Wings? And would you like to see him in Detroit?
Well, Lafreniere is an interesting one because I kind of wonder if New York is even interested in moving him, right? And then B, if they are, what the price would be, because I don't think it's as cheap as you might think. I mean, we are talking about a guy who went first overall 3 years ago. I don't think it's good optics if you move on from that player for a third round pick, right? Even though he has been disappointing, I think that there's still enough promise there and there's enough invested in him that it makes more sense to try to turn him into what he's supposed to be than just give up on him for scraps. So if New York is interested in moving him and the price isn't, you know, some craziness for lack of better words. Yeah, absolutely. I think Lafreniere is the exact type of player I think the Red Wings should be going after, you know, a young forward who is unproven at this point, but has a ton of potential still and can still grow and become a part of the Red Wings core. That's, you know, without saying a name, that's the exact description of a player that the Red Wings should be going out to get. So depending on the price. Yeah, absolutely.
I agree. I think if it's not too outlandish, and I don't know what the Rangers want for him, if they are shopping him, I think it could be in the realm of a, depending on, you know, his value right now is not high, but I still think he's worth a first round pick. I mean,
yeah,
you've got to at least start there if they're the Rangers. And I don't know if that's something that Yzerman wants to do, giving up first round picks. He has, I don't know. He hasn't really done a lot of that. He seems to like keeping these first rounders because you do get, I mean, look what he's gotten with the first round so far. So
if the Rangers would do the Islanders pick for Lafreniere, like one for one, I think I would seriously consider it. Because with that Islanders pick, you're basically hoping to get a player that like is him. What Lafreniere is like right now. Right. So, I don't know. Whatever player you pick at the Islanders pick, you're kind of fingers crossed, right? Whereas if you get Lafreniere, you know he's an NHL player at the very least.
Yeah. I mean, he may not be a superstar, but you know, he's still a solid player. He's proven in the NHL. So yeah, for sure. All right. Well, we've hit our halfway point of the show, so we got to pay some bills. So here's a message from the Hockey Writers.
Interested in writing for the Hockey Writers? If you have experience writing about hockey, are passionate about the sport, and are looking to take your writing to the next level, the Hockey Writers could be the place for you. Here at THW, you will have the opportunity to hone your craft at one of the world's largest and most respected hockey publishers. You will have control over what you write, be able to seek out media credentials, and be supported by a large network of writers and editors. Plus, you'll get paid for doing it. If you're interested and want to know more about team openings and requirements, please visit the Write for THW page on the Hockey Writers website. A link to that page is also listed in the description.
All right, we're back to our comment corner, which has been now become a staple over the last few months. So thanks again to Don for submitting some questions. We got Paradox Destroyer in here as well, and I've got another one I will add to our quick fire as well, off the rush. So we got three. So thanks to everyone who's commented. We've gotten really good amount of comments over the last few episodes, so thanks so much for that. So let's get to our question. And this is from Don, and he asks, is Jonathan Berggren a future first line player? Now, he has played on the first line, but is he going to be a core guy on that first line regular? So Devin, what do you think about Jonathan Berggren being that first line player all the time?
I do not think so. And I don't think that the Red Wings will need him to be that type of player. I think that Berggren, when all is said and done and he's done developing, is going to be a really solid, really productive middle six player. I think that he, obviously this was his first season, right? But I think it's kind of easy when you think about that to forget that he is 22 going on 23. He was drafted in 2018, same year as Adina and Valeno. So this isn't a 19-year-old who, you know, still has all the runway in the world in front of him. Now, mind you, Berggren still has plenty of room to develop, but he's a bit more of a finished product than, say, you know, Lucas Raymond, for example. And I think that as good as Berggren was this year, you definitely saw that there were some limitations. He played on the first line this season. He also played on the fourth line, and that was like a demotion. That wasn't like he started there. He did start there, but he went up and down the lineup. And that was, you know, because he was inconsistent throughout the season. Still a very good player, just needs to find consistency. And that's, you know, that's a young player, right? And now why I say they won't need him to is because, you know, we just, I just think they'll be able to find a player, whether it's in the draft, through a trade, you know, whatever. We just talked about Lafreniere, even Alex DeBrincat, or even some of the players that they could get with their two first round picks this year. I think those players will be able to turn into a top line player, and at least just be more productive than what Berggren is. Again, I think Berggren's going to be a very effective middle six player, and that's not a bad thing at all. And I think that Berggren's going to be kind of a staple on the team's second power play unit. I do think it's good to see him playing with Raymond right now over in the Worlds, because in theory, I think those two could really develop some chemistry and carry a line together, right? Maybe put those two on the wings with Casper down the middle. I think that could be a really good line. But then is that like your second line? I don't know if it's your first, but you know, case in point here, I think that Bergen's going to be a good player. Is he going to be a top line player? No, I don't think they need him to be. And I honestly think that unless Berggren explodes in the next year or two, I don't think he's going to be a player that you, if he's on your first line, it better be for chemistry reasons because you can do better.
That's fair. I think Berggren could potentially be that guy that does just go up and down the lineup. And that's not a bad thing. I mean, you need guys like that, the versatile, that you know can step into the top six and be productive in short periods of time, because injuries happen. And you need guys like that. You don't want to be throwing a fourth line guy or a third line guy up there just because you have no one else. If Berggren can be that guy that can, you know, thrive on the third and fourth line and also in the top six, you're laughing. I mean, these are the guys you want on your team. So, I think Berggren has the potential to be that. Like you said, they don't need him to be a first line player. They got plenty of guys that are going to be that. You know, Lucas Raymond, one, you know, Marco Casper, is going to be another that could, be that. Although, I mean, there's been talk about him being that third line guy as well. So, I mean, my point is they got a lot of options. They're going to have another one from this draft as well, potentially two. So yeah, we'll have to see, but Berggren definitely a future, like you said, that good middle six guy. I think for sure he's going to be that. Okay, well, let's get to our next one. And this is Paradox Destroyer. Hi, Paradox. Thanks again for another question. And this one's on the draft. So thanks for, we'll talk about the draft again here. So great for our show to keep talking about the draft. He asked about COVID's effect on this year's draft class, Devin. And then he's got basically like three questions packaged into one here. Let's start there. Do you think this class was affected by COVID? I mean, I'd say the draft class that was just after that lost all that time. Obviously, this class did as well. But it looks like they're kind of, I don't know. I think it hasn't affected them as much as some of the other ones. What do you think about this draft class with COVID happening there?
I agree. I think that the Owen Power, Matty Beniers draft, and even last year's draft, the Slefkovský Nemec draft, I think those were the ones that were like really affected by COVID. Some of these guys like lost an entire season. Shane Wright was one that I think lost an entire season.
Yeah.
Partially by his choice, but you know, that's a whole thing. And then here we are now in the 2023 draft, and some of these guys were affected, but they were affected when they were 15 year olds. Yeah. Right. Since then they've had a couple seasons that were normal ish to normal. And, you know, I mean, obviously this season, their draft year is for all intents and purposes, completely normal. So
yeah.
If it has an effect, it affected them a while ago. And at this point, I don't think there's really that much enough of an effect. And that's honestly a good thing because rewind the calendar 3 years and we definitely were talking about and being worried that the pandemic was going to affect generations to come basically in terms of their development and whatnot. And I think that now here we are in 2023 and we're like, not really. I think that's a really good thing.
Yes. Oh yeah. I mean, I'm glad it hasn't affected as much as we thought it could have. I mean, there was a time we didn't know if it was ever going to go back to normal because it just seemed like it was never ending. Now COVID's not gone. I mean, it is still around at certain points, but it's not as, it hasn't affected it as much as it, you know, a couple of years ago. Right. So yeah, this draft class obviously was affected, but not at the developmental, the big years where they were kind of the draft year, their draft minus 1 year, those years, haven't been for them. So, I will say though, there are some players that are in this draft that are now that could have been drafted, should have been drafted in that first year. Now they're overagers and could be drafted higher because of that.
That's so, I mean, probably the biggest effect, right?
That's there. The biggest effect, right? So you could see some players that have been that are draft eligible, were draft eligible, have been draft eligible for a couple of years and now getting drafted. And they could be drafting like in the third round, fourth round when they weren't drafted before. So keep an eye out for those types of prospects. Although this draft is really deep. So, I mean, as it is, right? So with that, and this is a good segue. I didn't even realize it was
going to be.
So is this draft the deepest ever? You know, and then we'll add on to that. What draft class could it be compared to if it isn't? Because there was one back, I'll say the 2015 draft is probably the most comparable, I think, because it was really deep. A lot of elite talent came from that one. Devin, what do you think? Is this the deepest draft ever? And what do you think can be compared to?
I think that the reason why we say the 2015 draft was so, so deep is because we've had 8 years now to look back and be like, oh, yep, that was a star. That's a star. That's a star. That's a star. Basically, I think it's way too soon to say this draft is the deepest ever or that it is going to be a contender for deepest ever. So we just don't know. We're projecting all these kids right now. We feel really good about Connor Bedard, really good about Adam Fantilli, basically the top five guys we all feel pretty good about. And then everybody from that point on is a projection. Mm-hmm. And I think a fair amount of them will turn into something, but until they turn into something, it's just kind of my word against fate, right? So tune in 5 years from now. We'll see if it's one of the deepest ever. I think it might be, but we'll see. The other draft also just real quick that I think you can throw out in terms of being like really, really, really deep is the 2003 draft. I'm pretty sure it is. That's one where you kind of go down the list and it's like, oh my gosh. All of these guys came out of there. I'm pretty sure Anaheim got both Ryan Getzlaff and Corey Perry out of that draft. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Talk about Dallas doing it in 2017, right? what draft class can it be compared to? I think you hit the nail on the head, Matt. I think it's got to be the 2015 draft. I think that comparison begins at the very top, right? Mm. 2015, you had the Canadian superstar and Connor McDavid. This year, you've got Connor Bedard. Their first name is even Connor. And then the second ranked prospect is the NCAA superstar who won the Hobie Baker Award as a freshman. Jack Eichel in 2015. Yeah. Adam Fantilli in 2023. I mean, from the get-go, the comparison is easy. And then from that point on, you can just kind of keep going down the list. We talk about the 2015 draft being really, really deep. And I think that in the same way, the 2023 draft could be as well. And one more thing I want to throw in that vein while we're talking about it. One of the big punchlines out of that 2015 draft is those three picks in a row that the Boston Bruins had. I'm pretty sure it was 12 to 14 or something like that. Yep. 13 to 15, maybe. And then like the next three guys who were drafted were Matthew Barzal, Thomas Chabot, and one other guy who Kyle Connor, I'm pretty sure it was. And my point with that is that if this draft is similar to the 2015 draft, like we all kind of think it will be, that range where Barzal, Connor, and the other person I said, because Chabot, that's right where that second pick the Red Wings have is, right? So if this draft is similar to that draft, the Red Wings should get a really, really good player at ninth overall. And then guess what? They should probably get another really, really, really good prospect with their second pick. So, we talked about trading it for Lafreniere maybe, but kind of keep that thought in the back of your head because the prospects that could be available to them with that second pick still might be pretty darn good themselves.
Yes, I agree with all that. I mean, we did that. Go back. If you want to watch that Prospect Corner episode, we did a whole redraft of that 2015 draft. Boston Bruins came up pretty well. If that's what they actually did, which would have been, I can't remember exactly what picks they got, but they were better than what they did get. And for Sebastian Aho was in that 2015 draft as well. So second round pick, shouldn't have been there. And then you got Eric Cernak, you know, in that second round as well. And then you got Mitch Marner, fourth overall. You got, oh my gosh. Just go down the list. I mean, you've got so many good players in this. I mean, obviously that first round, there were some misses. I mean, like those three picks. I mean, Jake DeBrusk's been pretty good. But Zboril, Senshin, where are they right now? They're not doing much. Noah Juulsen, he's been okay. I mean, there's some misses. I mean, there's going to be. But for the most part, this draft was just had so many superstars, or not superstars, but elite players come out of it that, you know, in that beyond the first round, I think is the biggest one.
Mikko Rantanen at 10th overall.
Like, yeah, there's another one. Like Rantanen should have been in the top. I think he was drafted in the top five in our redraft. So I think Mitch Marner actually went second overall or third overall.
Okay.
Because I believe, Aho was second overall. Marner was third. So, I mean, it's fun to always look back, but that 2015 draft, I would say, was probably the deepest. We'll see if this one is. I mean, I don't know. Like you said, we'll have to wait and do this, you know, 5-6 years, even 5 years may not be enough to see, but you'll see more. So, I mean, yeah, that 2015 was good. I'd say that's most comparable. And then, like you said, I don't know if it's going to be the deepest. We'll just have to wait and see, which is our motto on Prospect Corner. And anytime you talk about prospects, so we'll just have to wait. Okay, well, before we get to our final off the rush here, I got a couple questions. One, and we mentioned his name at the top, Lucas Raymond. This one is by William Steffi. He's got this question, and we talked about Moritz Seider's extension. He wants to know about Raymond's extension. What do you think his could look like?
It's interesting because I think that, as you know, gung-ho as I was about, you know, make sure you get Seider signed to an 8-year deal and, you know, unload the truck on him, do whatever you got to do. I do think you need to give Raymond term. I do think you got to lock him up. But he's less of a, I don't know how to say this without saying, like, without kind of overgeneralizing it. Seider won the Calder Trophy, right? And even, you know, once he got paired with Jake Walman, he really surged back and he looked like a top pairing defenseman, right? So that's two seasons in a row. He's looked like a top pairing defenseman. And I have every reason to believe he's going to look like a top pairing defenseman next season too. That's why you got to lock him up. Raymond, fourth place in Calder voting, last season. But then this year he had that sophomore slump. He was wildly inconsistent this year. He still has all the talent in the world, very clearly still a top six winger already at, you know, 21 years old. But I think there is enough room of, like, you know, he's really got to show, some growth next season. Mm-hmm. I think he's one that you can maybe wait a little bit on. There's definitely some risk with that. Because if he explodes, then his price is going way up. But on the same, on that thought though, you kind of want him to explode.
Yeah.
If your choice is don't let him explode or let him explode, I know which one you want. So, I think even for Raymond, he would want to wait too. Like, because maybe if he explodes, like I said, he's going to get more money. So I think Seider's one you want to get done, like, right away. I think both the Red Wings and Raymond will probably say, let's kind of play out next season and then we can go from there. He's going to be an RFA. It's not like he can test free agency really. And the Red Wings will have cap space to where they can give him what they need to give him. But before giving him, you know, 8 years and 8 million, let's, you know, make sure that he, you know, earns that. Right. I think minimum, just to kind of close this out, I went way too long for an off the rush, but whatever. I think minimum you want to give him like 5 years, because I think, you know, he's going to, in 3 years, I think he's going to get that payday. So you want to lock him up for at least a little bit of term, right?
Yeah.
but it just depends on whether or not he earns 8 years or not.
Yeah. I think he's a candidate for a bridge deal. I think that's one you do with him. I said Sider, don't do that because franchise defenseman, he's got to be. But for Raymond, I think he's a bridge deal guy. You see how he does over that. I mean, there is the risk there involved. Like he does blow up in the, that bridge. And then he says, oh, look it, I want this money. And he'd be worth it. So,
yeah.
And if it isn't, well, then you can get him at a lower discount or whatever, right? So that's why the bridge deals exist, because it's that test to see if he can, is worth that money, right? All right, final off the rush, and this should be quick. Next year's first line, Larkin, Raymond, and question mark. Who's the question mark?
I think that spot, first of all, I'm not even convinced that it's going to be Larkin and Raymond, believe it or not. I still think they're going to be trying to have Raymond anchor his own line. Mm-hmm. But when Larkin plays with Raymond, because he will, I think they will try to put a Bertuzzi type of player because right. that worked in the past, right? Maybe that's David Perron. I think he could fit the bill. Maybe Carter Mazur could fit that. I mean, if he makes the NHL roster, I think he fits that role really nice. And then maybe even like, I'm drawing a blank on who else it could be, but somebody who can be kind of the gritty guy, right? Playing the corners, make the dirty plays, the ugly plays that don't show up in the score sheet all the time. It's not going to be Bertuzzi, obviously. So. Yeah. Somebody who can play that role.
Yeah, I see that. So I guess you don't see Bertuzzi coming back in free agency, eh?
Probably not. Probably not. Leave the door open for sure, but probably not.
They'll probably talk to him, but...
Just see where he's at, right? But no, I will say too, because I did mention him, I could see Bergeron filling that spot too, especially with him playing with Raymond over in the world right now.
Yeah, I see that. They'll probably try it in training camp. I mean, that's where you do it. It's going to be interesting to see what that first line looks like. It's not for sure Larkin and Raymond. Yeah, I mean, could be who else? Who knows? I mean, we don't know who steps up and kind of gets into that role and who they sign in free agency, trades.
Yeah,
I mean, who knows what happens during the offseason? So stay tuned for that. Okay, well, there's another episode of The Grind Line. Thanks to everyone for all the questions again. We love it, and we build half our show on it. So, of course, we love it. like I say, the draft is coming up. We're almost a month away from it, 8 days away as we record. So 8 days away from being a month. So, lots of content on the hockeywriters.com. YouTube channel. We'll keep doing our shows here, and we'll have that draft target show, which we're going to try to get a few guys on it. Like I said, so we're guys and girls. I don't want to put, cause we will have that too. Lots of stuff coming up, on the website, on YouTube channel, throughout. Now, follow us on Twitter at THW Grindline. Again, drop those questions in the comments and, on Twitter as well. We love the comments. So thanks again. And thanks for watching. Thanks, Devin, for joining again. Couldn't do it without you, like you always say. And we'll see you next time on another episode of The Grind Line.